That's the definition of the Mashup Americans. We are hopeful and we are optimists, but we are not silver linings people. And we also believe that by dealing with hard things, something new will flourish from that. Not rose-colored glasses, but like, that's actually the optimism. We're not giving up. We're like, we're doing the work. Hope, the hope is a muscle work.
This is Hereafter, and I'm your host, Megan Devine, author of the best-selling book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay. This week on Hereafter, Rebecca Lehr and Amy Choi, hosts of the new podcast, Grief Collected. We're talking about grief and culture and what safety really looks like. Honestly, it's just really something when a bunch of grief nerds get together, so don't miss this one, everybody. All of the good stuff is coming up right after this first break.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knicks anniversary sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knicks' biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix anniversary sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Before we get started, one quick note. While we cover a lot of emotional, relational territory in our time here together, this show is not a substitute for skilled support with a licensed mental health provider or for professional supervision related to your work. Hey, friends. So grief is slowly starting to have a moment in the spotlight. From Anderson Cooper's show focused on his own grief to this very show Hereafter to some amazing television shows portraying grief in honest and difficult and beautiful ways, I think it's at least safe to say that grief is having more airtime than it has in the past. And obviously, I love this. More discussions about real grief from real people, please. My guests this week are the hosts of the podcast The Mashup Americans, Rebecca Lehr and Amy Choi. On Mashup Americans, they explore the intersections of culture and history for hyphenated Americans. That's their term. Hyphenated Americans meaning like Korean Americans or Colombian Americans or anybody with more than one identity. In the show today on Hereafter, you're going to hear Amy refer to mashup people, and that's what she's referring to. So Amy and Rebecca recently completed a series for Mashup Americans called Grief Collected. It's an exploration of American culture's unique relationship to grief. The show examines how grief moves through our bodies and our families and our communities and why we need to feel all of that in order to transform our futures personally and collectively. Now, of course, all of that stuff, all of that complexity, all of that is right up my alley. I love to have conversations with people where we just nerd out on the science of grief and humanity and relatedness. So it was really nice to spend time with these two people. It's also just really nice to spend time with two people who think and speak in analogies as much as I do. It's like our own special language. Now, I do have a couple of content notes here. Content note number one. Pretty early on in our discussion, Rebecca quoted some studies that say that acute grief is or should be done by the end of the first year. Now, if you find yourself bristling at that, and honestly, I did too, stick with us. We absolutely get into the nuances of that and how grief is absolutely not something that's done and dusted by the end of that magical one-year date. So don't let that throw you. We stuff a lot into our time together, and I think you're going to find it's a pretty special conversation, especially if you've ever wondered why grief is such a taboo subject. And then one last thing. We get into the topic of ancestral grief in this episode. If you're not familiar with that term, broadly speaking, it means grief that stretches back through your family line, often grief that was created by forced migration or enslavement or displacement. Okay, enough out of me, everybody. Let's get to this great conversation with Amy and Rebecca. We have been having so much fun in our introduction, but I want to get us rolling on our conversation today. So Amy and Rebecca, I am so glad you're here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oh, little twins. Say it at the same time.
Little twins. Okay, so in the introduction, when I was introducing you, I was saying how grief is really kind of having a moment in the spotlight right now, like after being ignored and not paid attention to for such a long time. It's like, if there's a unifying theme for the last several years, it's kind of grief. Whether we're talking about it openly or not, that's sort of the thing. And one of the most common questions that I have had from journalists over the last few years is, has the pandemic made us better at grief? And I think I surprise them every time when I say no. Mm-hmm. I don't think the last few years have made us like better at grief, but I do think it's made people curious about grief and understand that the things that we normally say in the face of really difficult life things, like that stuff doesn't work. So one of the taglines for your show is, do we even know how to grieve? Which, like, you know, people after my own heart. So I want to know what made you start exploring grief, since it's not exactly a topic that most people go running into with excitement. Rebecca, can we start with you?
Wait, so I just hard agree, can't see in the video, but it was like a lot of nodding from both of us. And I think we have the same sense that it's in the air. And maybe the best thing is that there's an awareness, maybe a new awareness or an awakening, that much of what we're experiencing is grief and loss. And it's death grief, death loss, but it's also loss of futures that we thought, and lots of other significant losses that we have to grapple with. And so I think we were realizing early in the pandemic how, first of all, we were also still under a regime that was actively oppressing our people, mashups, people, first generation, people living on the margins. And so we were sitting in a significant amount of fear and also a loss of what we thought the environment that we lived in was, or even what it could be. So there was a lot of everyone sitting pretty raw. And then you're watching, you know, even, you know, you're reading the newspaper and it says, this seems quaint now, but I remember the 100,000 mark of deaths from COVID, and turning to Amy and saying, I don't understand how we aren't marking this other than in a newspaper. Like, these are all individual humans, our neighbors, people that we claim to love through this really silly, jingoistic, like, language that we've had around us for especially the last several years, our you know, fellow countrymen. And yet we can't even stop and say their names. And there was something that it felt like it was all building together. And we were already, it just happened quite early, realizing that we really wanted to understand it more. What are the different types of grief? We're experiencing this in really profound physical ways, emotional ways, personal griefs, community griefs. And as with everything we do, it starts from our own interests and our own curiosity. And so I think that was the genesis of this. It was building on the 4-5 years before that and a certain kind of loss and grief that then became acute loss and grief of our friends and our neighbors.
What I hear you saying in that is, like, I don't think we were quite exhausted yet, but the pre-exhaustion of the years leading up to March of 2020 sort of had us primed for what the hell is this?
100%.
Right. We were sort of asking those questions, those deeper questions, and thinking about belonging and loss and relatedness and safety and community and connection. We were all, well, many of us were thinking about that. And then here is this big event that starts to kill people mm-hmm. and really undermine our ideas of community and safety and relatedness and pain and suffering and all of this stuff. And I love that for you, the answer to that was, let's investigate.
I think that's also, we have to turn around and face it. And mm-hmm. that has always been our way. Like, our ethos has always been super optimistic, super hopeful, but the path to getting there has been to, like, find your way through immense challenge. And this is maybe going to sound like a wild parallel, but I think of it as like grief is this ever-present force in our lives. It's always, it's like sunlight or air or something. And so I have two kids. Rebecca also has two kids. I gave birth to both my children via C-section. And first of all, the whole journey of learning about, like, what happens to your body and how you give birth and all of these things, right? And it's so much about, like, what you can kind of face in your body and, like, what is real. And a crazy thing to learn about giving birth via C-section is that babies, like, will actually shy away from the light. They don't like the blast of cold air and the bright hospital lights and all of the things that are happening in a cesarean birth. And so the doctor actually has to, like, get the baby and pull it out, right? And I swear this is related to what we were talking about.
But I'm with you, baby.
But I think that that's actually what we had to do for so long. There was this, like, ever-present force that we knew was there that, like, kind of, if you don't ever face the grief in your life, you're haunted by it. One of the things that Adrienne Marie Brown said to us that really has stayed with me is that if you don't get an opportunity or if you're unable to process your grief, your grief becomes your shape. And I think that that's what happens. Like, we can curl away or kind of shy away from this ever-present force that's always in our lives. It's like part of the human existence, like a baby not trying to actually face life. But then, like, you got to get out there into the cold air and into the bright light and into the scary stuff in order to, like, actually live. And I really think that there is a part of us that was like, okay, we're surviving right now. And we were lucky enough to survive through that, like, through those critical moments of the pandemic. And then we were like, but surviving isn't enough. Like, it was enough for, like, a year. Mm. And then after a year, we were like, okay, but now this will become our shape. This is going to haunt us. So how do we understand it better and just confront it and face it? Because in our souls, we knew that it's not something that, like, just goes away. It's not something that, unless it is processed and unless you do kind of allow it to flow through you, that it ever goes away. It's like another one of those bummers. It's like, you know, you can't, like, exercise once and then you're done exercising. It, like, fucking sucks. Like, you just have to keep doing it. And I think that's the thing with grief, is that you can't, like, mourn something once and then be like, okay, well, now I'm done with the grief portion of my life.
I want to jump in just for a second, because I can definitely listen to you talk about this forever, but I want to grab something that you just said, which was, like, we have to process it so that we can be part of this life and, like, not shy away from things. I love that you ended that with, like, it's not like exercise, you can't just do it once and be over it. I think we have this idea that if you just like, okay, I'm going to process my grief. I'm going to work through this stuff and then I never have to do it again, right? Like this transactional way of engaging with that atmosphere of grief, right? Like it's not like a one and done thing. There's no finish line to it like that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because I think when we start talking about that, people are like, all right, I'll do my stuff and then I'm going to be okay. But it sounds like this is more about coming into relationship with the grief that exists in all of its many forms, instead of trying to avoid that relationship or pretend that relationship isn't actually happening.
It's exactly that, which is, I think that mm-hmm. to a T, everyone we spoke to talk, and you're a therapist, but talked so much shit about Kubler-Ross. And I think, and I'm not going to get into what her intentions were, and that I think they were about people dying, not actually about grieving. So we'll give her that benefit of the doubt there. But everyone was like, that's not a real thing, right? And we as Americans particularly tend to grab on to like a path, right? So, oh, here's the five stages of grief. And then I'm just going to go them in order and sort of try to make things fit into them and then be done. And that was really interesting. First of all, truly Kubler-Ross shitting on was a universal theme of alongside perspective.
Yeah.
That were like big picture. The other, though, related to that is, I think this was really profound. So it's particularly death loss and death grief. The acute grieving period is fairly short, actually, in the grand scheme of most people's lives. And it's common to have longer, prolonged grief. But most people, you know, within a year are living again. And that's what of grieving something acutely. Now, that's just to say, that doesn't mean that you're not then grieving for your whole life in some way. It's just that acute grief period where that's like the primary focus of your life.
Like you're unable to function.
And that was really interesting to look at, you know, longitudinal studies, people saying this from their experiences. And then, you know, but then the ways that it crops up always surprise you across your life. And literally the other day, and I'm talking about a loss that's thinking about a really profound loss for me that's 23 years old. And the other day a song came on, like we were driving to San Francisco and I was like, I'm going to play the Grateful Dead. I just was doing the old, I'll play music to go into San Francisco with, you know. And so I play the Grateful Dead and Ripple came on, the song. And it's a song that I'm not even a Deadhead. You know, I can have a nostalgic moment for a little Jerry Garcia, but mostly like the Cherry Garcia ice cream. So anyways, it comes on and I just start weeping. And the experience was I realized and I then texted my best friend who also experienced this profound loss with me 23 years ago. And I was like, did we play this at our friend's funeral memorial? And she was like, yeah, we did. And it, I mean, truly, I was so surprised, but also it felt good. It was intense, but it felt good to be in connection with that moment, with myself as an 18-year-old, with my friend who I'm still friends with, his mother, we're still in relationship, but to get to do that and to remind myself of the experiences of life, I don't know, that's just to say it's constant. Or I just opened some cards and I found a note I'd written to my grandma that I hadn't sent, and she's dead. So it was about our book club. I was like, here, I'm sending you this book. And I had brought her the book. I remember that. But the note was here and I just started to cry. It just made me feel alive. The whole point of this is that there's this sort of acute period of grief, which is pretty finite, actually, in the grand scheme of things for most humans. And then there is this long period of living with all of the griefs of your life and the ways that you engage with it. That is just the rest of your life.
Yeah. I can hear some of my listeners being like, it's not over in a year. You can't let her say that. Yeah. And I think this is where it gets really tricky, because humans really do like these like start and end dates and here's when it's going to be over. And like we apply that. Most people are, you didn't say this, but like most people are fine in a year. Like we weaponize this time window. And if we say that the acute part of grief should be over at a year, then our interpersonal tolerance for it is about 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, you know, like at the funeral, people are like, now that that's behind you, you need to get back out into life. Like all of the shit that we do. I mean, language is so tricky because if we say most people are sort of wrapping up that acute crying so hard you vomit sort of part of grief at the year point, for me, that doesn't have enough nuance in it.
Uh-huh.
I love that you followed that up with, this is something that lives with you forever. Like, your person is never not dead, right? I work with a lot of people whose children have died, and it's like when they're watching their kids' classmates graduate from high school and go on to college and get into partnerships and, like,
have,
you know,
children.
All of this stuff, they're like, your kid is still dead, and that is still grief. So I love a lot more nuance in the conversations about how long grief lasts, because I know that as our human brains, we're like, this sucks and I need it to have an end date. And if you're watching somebody you care about be in great pain, you're like, I need to know that this will be over because this is really hard to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That impulse to, like, make other people feel better and give them an end date is really about our own helplessness in the face of somebody's pain. So I love that you brought in a lot more nuance in there. And before you said Ripple, I was going to interrupt and say, did you listen to Ripple?
Yeah.
Because that's the song.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. No, and I think I appreciate that. I think that's exactly, first of all, we're all human. And I think one of the psychologists we spoke to was talking about the infinite variability of being human. So we can call all of these patterns that we see. And I think that they're helpful in realizing that you're one of many people. And hopefully that makes you realize you can find community and connection with other people who have had similar or not similar experiences, but similar reactions or whatever that looks like, to find community. Because actually that was one of the what we found in all of our conversations was that, like, community and storytelling were two of the fundamental pieces of what it means to grieve. And that is why part of why the pandemic has been extra painful is that you couldn't be with people. Mm-hmm. And people are what help you realize, like, other people loved somebody that you loved. And therefore, that person is being grieved by many people and also will live through many people. And if you're not allowed to be with people, you feel so fucking alone and not human. And I think that has been the inhumanity of this period, the loneliness and the isolation from other people's touch, from other people in community, has been one of the most specific to, I think, a pandemic experience. And I think Amy can, we could elaborate. This is the one of the parallels for us was also as first generation Americans or people who have ancestral grief. There's also a loneliness to that. And I think that has something that we tried to explore in this series.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks.
Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
We've been talking to Rebecca Lehr and Amy Choi. Let's get back to them. The episode where you had Linda Tai on, where you're talking about ancestral grief and intergenerational grief, that for many people, it wasn't safe to acknowledge the grief that existed. So Amy said, not grieving is actually a survival strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talk about like the transformative power of grief, right? Like it's this force, right? That like it can move mountains and also move psychologies and bodies and emotions. It's incredibly destabilizing, and you have to be in a safe place in order to let that all happen. And I think for many people, whether they like, for example, a first generation immigrant or somebody who is fleeing a situation, or, you know, for better or for worse, at least in most of our immediate circles, there is a sense of, yes, we came to America for opportunity. And also that's like the choice between starvation or America, right? Like it's a choice, and there's opportunity, and there's also a reason why there was no opportunity in this other place, whether that was fleeing war or the Holocaust, or, you know, there's like a lot of different things happening. And so when you have to focus on how to survive and how to just like find food, find a home, find a way to get your children educated, there's no way to like allow that destabilizing force of grief into your life and to honestly process the unbelievable losses that come with that. And I think, you know, we meaning like our like mine and Rebecca's generation are the great beneficiaries of people who have made incredible lives and set up opportunity for us here in this country. And also for me, I would say been incredibly displaced, like the line was broken from us and our home country. And that was not because of any sort of shame. It was not because of any sort of need for assimilation. It was simply because there was no way to think about anything in the past because we had to be right here moving forward and surviving in this instant. And when like my generation got out of that survival mode, like we had very comfortable lives, what we then miss, because it's very human to miss it, is all of that. You know, my grandmother, after her husband died, eventually immigrated to the States and was with my mom and two of her sisters who are here. She was my only living grandparent that I knew, but she never talked about her life in Korea. That was just like not something that was available to her, that was available to us. My parents didn't go back for decades. They went back for like each of their parents' deaths, essentially. And what I see now is like me and my sister and my cousins starting to build and repair our own relationships to Korean culture and to like building relationships with a family that we have in Korea that our parents kind of necessarily had to sever in order to just be here and just make life in America work here.
Well, it's also not, you can't even also underestimate, there's so much about
technology.
That's like, what I was going to say, is that like there just wasn't, you would call your grandmother, whatever, you remember the long distance ring? It was like a lower, longer.
Oh my God. And you had to buy cards.
And
in
you
order
would
to
talk
do
for 2 minutes. You would say hello. Oma's on the phone. You need to say hello. You'd say hello. And then there was, okay, love you. And there was not a long conversation because that was somehow cost $50. I don't even really understand how any of it worked, but it felt like it was at least $2,000. Like in my mind as a child.
I don't understand how we lived with long distance charges and like certain windows for so long. And now it's like we don't even notice that that doesn't exist anymore. Oh
my.
Anyway.
Every time I travel with my phone and all I have to do is pay $5 extra to have the phone just work wherever I am.
But like, then like you text me pictures from like Europe.
Or like
but El it's Salvador. Crazy. Like I remember like going with my parents to a print shop to like print out a photograph that my dad took on like a film camera.
Yeah.
And then we put it in one of those blue and red and white like postage things.
The airmail things.
Yep. Yes. To then like mail it to Korea. Right, like that's crazy.
I just thinking about even that as an additional layer of decontextualization of distance from a thing. There was no way to, I mean, El Salvador, where my mom is from, was in civil war for the first part of my life. We couldn't go there. It was my family was not there in that period. So I also didn't go there till I was maybe 13 or 14. And so I think that's why it took me longer to realize how foundational it is to who I am. Because it felt, it's a long journey. Anyways, I think part of it is related to this, the long tail, the long life of grief is the sort of the ways that it keeps popping up. And sometimes you don't realize, you know, again, in the Adrienne Marie Brown, it's your shape, but sometimes you don't realize how much part of you is shaped by the losses that you've experienced, even the ones that you are so foundational to yourself that you don't know that they we couldn't even name them. Like we're just starting to name them. Yeah. I feel like
we have this idea, especially in Western culture, that like the hard or difficult things that happen to you shouldn't actually affect you. You should use them as fuel to become bigger, stronger, better, faster, which just goes against what it's like to be human. Mm-hmm. Right? Everything in our lives shape us in our current lives, but also down through the generations. And I love that you bring that in. Like, I think we've also sometimes like, oh, you know, we didn't process grief correctly back in the 50s and that was bad. And now we've got like epidemics of alcoholism and suicidality and like all of this stuff. And I think that there is, you know, as with everything human, like the either or binary does not, it does not work. Mm-mm. There's a lot more middle ground in there of like, yeah, so many of us come from lineages of suffering. Mm-hmm. Right. In however you want to define that. Mm-hmm. Right. That's different for race and ethnicity and like a lot of things. So however you want to define that lineage of suffering for yourself, it's like there were reasons that people didn't turn to face that and connect inside it. Some of those were very literally your survival meant that you could not name what happened. I love that in that one episode where you talk about like it was not safe to say ouch or to even say that somebody left because that would have put other people in danger. So there are reasons why we haven't been that word metabolizing that you use a lot, right? To talk about how much, it's a very visceral description here, but how much undigested grief was by necessity. And when you inherit that, like being able to turn around and look at it and say, there were reasons that this happened and here's what I want to do with it when I receive that hot potato of this is like, what's the relational cure, I guess, is sort of where I go with this. Because a lot of what we're talking about is for various reasons, we aren't allowed or it's not safe to look at each other and see each other in the difficult parts of life and connect inside that and care for each other. So how do we start shifting that? And the answer, as always, at least for me, is community and telling the truth and starting to really talk about all the ways that grief has shaped us right now and back through whatever history you want to explore.
I want to sort of reflect back something so beautiful that you just said, which feels so resonant for us, which is, it's not judgmental. I think that's something that's a theme of the work we're doing or in Grief Collected is we're really truly asking questions and trying to understand better what grief is more broadly, what it is for us, what it is for intergenerationally what that looks like, but not judging the ways that our families dealt with it. It's just, those are just facts in some way, that, or that's just what it is. And to your point, there are reasons for that, that you don't have to respect them. You don't have to, that's not my job to tell you what to respect, but it's just is. And so I think for us, it's this, the more knowledge we have, the more capacity that we have to ask questions, or the more we understand about the questions we might be able to ask of ourselves, kind of, and understand like historical context and our families, then the better our future lives will be, the better we can do for our children. And they're still going to be like, you guys, they,
look right. what you they guys did not look what know they what were not
doing in this time. I mean, we joke about this all the time with like what our children, I'm like,
they're what gonna is go to, my children?
They're going to go to therapy for this.
I'm like, I'm breaking the cycle. And they're like, no, you did not.
You broke your part of it. And I think that's, I love that grounding too, that like, we each do our own part of it with as much awareness and kindness and connection as we possibly can, knowing that that epic journey will never be complete.
Yes.
And, you know, like how can you make sure to the best of your ability and capacity that what you hand on to the world is as thoughtful as you can make it be?
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that, I mean, there's also research that shows that the more that you can name that generational trauma, the more that you can name and place yourself in historical context, the more you can heal, or like the less stigma that like we personally associate with it. A researcher, Dr. Maria Yellowhorse Braveheart, who we were not able to book on the show, but we became fascinated with her work because, you know, she studied indigenous populations. She's Oglala Lakota also. Her research shows that if Native peoples could place their trauma kind of essentially like in a historical context, in a historical timeline, it decreased levels of stigma. It decreased kind of dysregulated behaviors. It lowered levels of like depression and suicide and addiction across the board, because the power of understanding that you were not like born out of thin air, which is very much kind of the American way, is that you're here and now you're just going to push forward or like climb that ladder or like make progress or whatever. We come from a place, and that place doesn't have to define us, but it helps us understand who we are. And the fact that like then we're connected to other people and to our ancestors and to our communities, rather than just like individuals that have to like swim our way through this ocean of madness all by ourselves. It's like, it's actually powerful in a way that can be like scientifically studied. And so I think, you know, that was a lot of what this project was about for us, was stuff that like we felt we knew, but then being able to research it and being like, oh my God, real people with PhDs and longitudinal studies and like,
yeah, like your limbic system like gets ethnographers fucked from and, grief.
Like, yes, you're like, it does. It's real.
Yeah. And this is such a big, like, I really think that acknowledgement is kind of the Rosetta Stone of the human condition here. It's like, when you are allowed to tell the truth and be supported in the truth of your experience, current or historic, historical, something happens when you're allowed to know the truth of it. You know, like if you are becoming aware of your history and the things that your bloodline or your community line has endured, it doesn't change the bullshit of it. It doesn't change the horror of it or the violence of it. Being allowed to say, yes, this happened, and yes, these are the effects that I can see, makes something different. Like, this is why I am fascinated with like truth and reconciliation committees, right? Because there is something about the anti-gaslighting of that, right? To be able to tell your nervous system, your limbic system, your generational inheritance, whatever that looks like, yes, this happened, right? You and I, just to bring it into something ridiculous, you and I were talking, before the break about a cockroach situation.
Oh, yes.
Where your previous landlady, you were saying there, stick with me here for a second, but like, You are sitting there in your kitchen in the city, and there are insects in your house, and you call up the landlady and you say, there are cockroaches, we need to do this. And she says, no, there aren't.
Yeah.
We never had them. And there is something really fundamental that gets screwed up when there is something real and true and happening, and somebody who does have the power to do something about it looks at you and says, that's not true.
Correct.
And this is true relationally and emotionally, and it's true for our nervous systems, and it's true not just in this moment in time, but in all the moments of time that have come before, that when things hurt, being able to look at each other and say, you're right, that there is healing in that, not making everything pretty and erasing pain and not saying that it doesn't still suck, but there is healing inside looking at what sucks and saying it sucks. And I love that that in your show you really looked at the science behind that, because I think that that can feel really amorphous and out there, and it's not amorphous and out there. It's in here. It's in our bodies. It's in the ways that we greet the world. It's in the ways that we connect with each other. And that being able to build those communities where you can say what hurts and be heard and seen in it, like, that is what builds the beautiful world to pass on to the next generations.
There's so many layers here. Okay, first of all, so you're talking about truth and reconciliation. It applies at such a, especially in the United States. I mean, this is across. We have a conversation in the series with Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, who wrote this book. Well, she's written many things, but on repentance and repair. And there's a lot about national repentance and also about truth and reconciliation. And that episode was about kind of this idea of cultural community grief. Like, what does it mean to actually, I think it was Desmond Tutu, right? Wasn't it, who said, like, or what? Well, you can't unknow it. Once you know,
you can't.
You might not do anything with this information, knowing what, you know, was in the pain and horrors inflicted on Black South Africans, but you can't unknow it now that you've seen it on national television and everybody has heard it, and you can no longer feign ignorance. You could be a fucking asshole, but you can't feign ignorance. There's also there, I think, you know, what we're struggling with in this time period is this more metaphorical, although it doesn't seem so much, loss that we're experiencing in the U.S., I think, of this idea of how could you even have truth and reconciliation if we're fighting like critical race theory or something that's simply or telling historical truth, or even an acknowledgement that what we know and the facts we have gathered or our openness to it can change over time. And there's a fixedness in the way we think about what being American is or what America is, which I think ultimately we believe that grieving, that will ultimately open us up to building something more beautiful and better. But we have to acknowledge that we can't gaslight every single person who has experienced tremendous amounts of pain at loss in order to build the country that we then glorify. It ultimately is not healthy, and we're not metabolizing the grief. We're not, even when there's, like, you know, you read Isabel Wilkerson's Cast and you suddenly realize things for the first time. It's great to learn for the first time. You're not penalized for not having known it before. Learn it now and start to grow from there. And I think that's part of what we are wrestling with in this work.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more.
Millions of people have made the switch to Nix Sleek Proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Nix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Nix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Nix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Nix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Nix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
We've been talking to Rebecca Lehr and Amy Choi. Let's get back to them. We work really, really hard to not feel grief. Like, as you're describing that, I'm thinking, like, all of the gaslighting at an individual, community, and national level, like, all of the, what, God, I've put it out of my brain, but alternative truth, right?
Oh,
remember that one?
Yeah, yes.
Right? Like, all of that stuff, to me, now this, you know, acknowledging here that grief is always the lens through which I look at the entire world, but, like, all of that stuff was a way of saying, nope, nothing wrong here, nothing to see here, I'm going to keep myself safe from feeling anything, and, like, you, like, otherizing other, you know, other people going through challenging times or creating challenging times for other people. Like, for me, everything is about, you are either working really hard to pretend that everything is fine and nothing hurts, or you're allowed to sort of collapse into it and, you know, whatever spools out from that. But, like, what is it that feels so dangerous about acknowledging grief that we have literally built an entire civilization that denies it?
Mm-hmm.
What, you don't have to have a, like, a specific answer for that, because I think that is one of those major answers that we spend a lifetime answering. But through this project and through all of Grief Collected, it's like, do you know how to answer that question? What do you say to that? Like, what is so dangerous?
I mean, I think it's, like, really scary to live fully and to just, like, embrace or face, like, the truth of life head on. And the truth of it is that grief is a huge part of it, and that grief is probably, like, the biggest truth we'll face. Like, Rebecca and I actually talked a lot as we were working on the show about whether it was a show about, like, facing mortality and actually about fear of death and fear of our own mortality, or was it about what grief is. And I think just, like, understanding that life is loss, I don't feel this anymore, but it's, like, a tremendously dark idea. And I think that that is not something that Americans are inclined to do. We, at our point of view, and I think we share this, is that that really tragic horror, like, that fear of loss of both of ourselves, our like, mortality fears, and then the fear of losing your loved ones, which is a million times worse, that we understand that that comes with great beauty and love and joy, but they don't exist separately. And I think we just really want to believe that, like, we can have one without the other. I think that's part of it. Like, my daughter, 7, our family, and she in particular, had a horrific loss when she had just turned 5. Her best friend died. Her best friend's mother died very suddenly. It was incredibly tragic. And so she has had to deal with kind of, like, the void of death at an incredibly young age. And to this day, she'll still be like, and it's very simple, and it's completely in, like, this incredibly wise 7-year-old's perspective. But, like, if she can't sleep at night, what she says to me is, like, I was thinking about death. And I was like, Were you thinking about somebody dying? Because it's sometimes that, like, fear, like, she'll be like, I dream that you died, or I dream. She's like, no, just death. And I think that that's at the core of a lot of this, is that particularly as Americans, we don't ever want to believe that there's not another opportunity around the corner. And that's why we also, as you said earlier, have to transform every hard thing into, like, fuel for the next thing. But the acceptance that just suffering exists and that you will have to suffer is something that we just don't want to.
Yeah.
Also, we like to make everything weakness. I think that's another thing, is that Americans are like, well, you got sick, you're weak, or you're poor.
It's like moral.
You're poor and you're weak. Or you can't handle somebody dying and going back. You know, you're weak. You couldn't birth children and go back to work after 2 weeks. You're weak. That whole narrative thread about the storytelling of America, I think that's related in here as well, which is that allowing you to be a human, and a human, this is more Buddhist, right? Living is suffering. But if you're allowed to acknowledge that and live in that truth, then, you know, you're not weak. You're just alive. And I think that's the part where it butts against the sort of, every structure in our society is not meant for supporting, whether it's bereavement leave, family leave, you know, maternity, parenting leave, all of those things. There's nothing. Or even like proper healthcare to acknowledge that we're human beings and we get sick, and we're human beings and we die, and we're human beings and we have children. It's not set up for that, which is all interconnected for us, this idea of an inability to confront, or not confront. That just like feels so, that feels like that's even like so war aggressive. And aggressive. It's like to just acknowledge and hold people and love each other. That's like, just because any given day, any person you're interacting with is experiencing something really hard. And if you start to live and interact with people that way, like, actually your life is better because you're more open and more loving.
I love where you're going with this, okay? Because I think, like, this is all so interrelated, right? Like, we guard against more loss by trying to pretend that loss doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And if it does happen, we'll be okay, right? It's not going to be that bad. I'll bounce back. Like, all of the things that we say to somebody with a chronic illness or grieving a death, or, you know, any of these
things. Take a yoga class.
Like, take a yoga class. You'll be fine. Like, this deep sort of atavistic need to survive and be okay. And how much does that sort of turn in on itself when we have built, not even just in modern times, but like way back, even before pre-recorded history here, but like, if we don't have communities where it is okay to feel how horrible it is to lose people you love, or to lose bodily autonomy, or, you know, any of these things, like, we don't have the infrastructure to witness and observe that. So it is dangerous to feel that. And then we just sort of keep like layering that on, like, you can have all of these books and podcasts and bumper stickers that say like, feel the fullness of your humanity and let grief and sadness and pain in. Well, if we go back to what you were talking about not grieving as a survival strategy, like, until we start building a world where it is okay to fall apart and to have feelings and to be affected by the losses in our lives, it will remain unsafe to have them. Which means that we're not getting the world that we want. So, like, to me, the answer here is bravery and connection.
Yes.
To start having these conversations, to start talking about the things that hurt, and build, what is that silly entrepreneurial thing, like, build the plane while you're flying it? Right? Like, that the real safety is in, I think I'm quoting a line from my own book, but like, the real safety is in hurting with each other, not trying to pretend that things don't hurt.
Yeah. Right. Well, don't you love when you're like, wow,
I love
so
when
smart.
I quote me.
I was so smart. I think that like that also, like, there cannot be enough like emphasis on the idea that we start weighing our like individual worth on how successfully we navigate. Like, you're not supposed, like, if you were good at this, or if we went through the five stages of grief well, then we'd be done. You know, that like, it's incredibly vulnerable to suffer and to suffer not in silence. I mean, I even think like...
Ugh, and everyone's so judgmental. That's the other
piece. So judgmental.
And I want to bring that just in there for a second. That idea when, you know, we were saying that just in longitudinal studies that the acute grief period is, you know, there it's grief is long and the acute grief period does is finite, even if it's long or not prescriptive. One of the things Amy kept asking was like, what is a healthy expression of grief? And it and because that's what everyone says, a healthy expression of grief. And and you're like, OK, what is that? Because also we like to know the answers. We do. But our work is very non-prescriptive, I think, similar to yours. And I think just trying to navigate how to not judge somebody when if they are done early or done early. If they,
I know what
you
mean.
Know, if they're like, or vice versa, if somebody's just like, actually, for me, we have somebody close to us who is caregiving a sick family member and has to go do something. I was like, please take all the time you need. And they said, you know what? It's actually better for me to work while I'm doing this because that's something that occupies me in a healthy way for me. And I'm like, you do whatever you need to know. I'm just telling you, you have the option. I say that in to point out that there's just so much judgment about every individual person's relationship to it. And we're just so uninterested in that.
Yeah, so judgy. I mean, you see this in the widowed community a lot, right?
Yes.
Like, if you start dating again, people are like, don't you think that's too easy? Was your marriage not very good? But if you don't start dating, people are like, what is wrong with you? You need to get back out into life, right? Like,
yes.
You absolutely cannot win. No. If your, you know, your sister or your kid dies, you know, like a drunk driving accident, and you don't start a foundation to like talk about the horrors of driving under the influence, then you're not honoring their memory. But if you do something like that, then you're milking it. Right.
Yeah, like I would do a fucking murder.
Right. And like, again, like for me, that all boils down to God, we are so uncomfortable with being human.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
So uncomfortable. It's that thing of like, OK, none of these terrible things would ever happen to me.
No.
But if they did, I would handle it a lot better than that person. So I would be OK. Like, this is a really, I'm going to use atavistic again because it's a great word. But this like really deep-seated need to know that you're going to be okay, like that survival instinct. And everything that we're taught is like the only way you survive is by being unaffected. And it's like what I feel like, you know, what you're trying to do with Grief Collective, what I've been trying to do for the last 14 years is like, no, actually our survival is in the dissolution. Like our survival is in the messiness and being able to look at somebody and say, however you need to take care of yourself in this time, as long as you're safe and you're not harming others, then I want to support that. It might not be something that I would choose, but I'm not you.
Mm-hmm.
Just allowing people to be the full expression of themselves is really a...
We love to get it right. We love to be the right ones of it.
But there is a real accuracy in there that... I keep coming back to, like, you know how in yoga when they say the full expression of the pose,
right?
Like, I feel like this emotionally, like the full expression of the emotional pose.
Yep.
How do we start exploring that and finding places where we can be that with each other? And that is really the only safety that we can reach for.
But also, if it's not going away, which it's not, it's just transforming or going or by acknowledging it or expressing it, and it's going into different parts of you. And then when it bubbles up, because you've done the work, you know what it is, or you see it in some, because we as a society in our dream world that we're working towards know what it is. We see it bubbling up and we can then
support you.
Our community through things like that, through anything, through loss and grief, that feels healthy. Again, back to healthy expressions of grief. That's what feels healthy is, and I think this is the connectedness. I think ultimately as we said, the goal of all of our work at the Mashup Americans is about our full expression of our humanity and also about connectedness. Like, we are in this together. And I think, I don't know what the next version of, I mean, we also made a fiction rom-com last year. So things that give us joy and life and keep us, yeah, buoy us, like these, those are all related. A grief, grief collected and a rom-com for us, that's it. That's living, you know? And I don't know, just being with people, like getting to have this conversation. And now we know we are all, like, our lines are connected and the ways that we can support each other are now richer and deeper and, you know.
I didn't even have to ask you what does hope look like for you, at least for you, Rebecca, because that, like, to me, that sounds very hopeful, mm-hmm, that this isn't about the cessation of pain or the transformation of difficult things. It's like, how fully do I get to be here with other people being fully here? And sometimes that is a rom-com at the same time that you were just like having a moment of crying to a Grateful Dead song, like that. The freedom of that.
That's right? It.
Is a really cool thing. Amy, how about, what if I ask you the question that I did not ask Rebecca, but she answered anyway, so in tune with where I was going. But knowing what you know and what you've explored in Grief Collected and just, you know, in your life, rom-coms included, like, what does hope look like for you right now, today?
Hope looks like my belief that we all can transform, that we can all change. I don't believe that anything is static. And that is very scary. But I also don't think that the foundations that we tend to think will keep us safe and static, that we try and keep static, are really the things that are truly foundational to our lives. So I think, you know, a lot of my point of view on grief in particular, which was very different than Rebecca's, was really about ancestral and familial grief and that sense of dislocation and loss. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of, like, my personal work has been, in this idea that, like, of changing those relationships and breaking some of those trauma cycles for my kids. And I'm doing a really good job. Like, I'm really proud of myself. And I think that that's actually something that I see in so many people that come to us, that, like, I think all a mashup is about transformation. It's about being, like, rooted in traditions and knowing who you are and being able to look forward and create the future that we want. And I truly believe that we can. I truly believe in, like, the power of imagination and creativity and change. And I think that we all have it. I think if we just tap into it, we can all do it. And that always gives me hope.
I love that, like, such a foundational thing here of, like, it makes me feel really hopeful to look at hard things,
mm-hmm,
right? Because then you are in relationship with them. And when you are in relationship and you have your eyes open and your heart open, you can experiment and you can explore and you can play, which is a really powerful agent of healing and connection, right? Mm-hmm.
That's the fundamental,
to not seize up. Yeah.
That's the definition of the Mashup Americans. We are hopeful and we are optimists, but we are not silver linings people. And we also believe that by dealing with hard things, something new will flourish from that. Not rose colored glasses, but, like, that's actually the optimism. We're not giving up. we're doing the work. Hope, the hope is a muscle work.
I love that there is something new being created by having these explorations and having these conversations that we don't know what it is yet. I think I can slip into my Sparty pants mode and be like, I know what the world will be like when we embrace all of this. And I love that we don't know and we're creating it and we get to find out. I love this, friends. Okay, so that is a good place for us to wrap up our conversation. Obviously, I'm going to link to everything in the show notes. But where can people find you? What do you want them to know?
Yeah, so you can find the Mashup Americans, and this series is really the seventh season of our podcast. So that the Mashup Americans and Grief Collected are anywhere you listen to podcasts. We also have a beautiful website, griefcollected.com, which has not only transcripts and you can listen, but also white papers, which links to a bunch of different things, a link to bookshop. I believe we have your book in the bookshop. So we'll make sure that it's there too, but all the kind of resources and ways we've been engaging with this. And we're at Mashup American on social media, although my relationship to social media is complex, but yes, you can listen wherever to the Mashup Americans and Grief Collected, and you can find griefcollected.com is where all of our, where the show and all of its beautiful components live.
Excellent. All right, everybody. So remember that you can get all 9 episodes of Grief Collected wherever you listen to your podcast, and don't sleep on those transcripts because they're awesome. And I spent a lot of time reading through all of the transcripts of every single show. Okay, stay tuned, everybody. I'm going to come back with your questions to carry with you right after this break.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Each week, I leave you with some questions to carry with you until we meet again. Now, you know what really struck me in this conversation this week? Well, one, just how far-ranging a conversation about grief can be, with things looping back in on themselves in some kind of endless, if this happens, then that happens equation. But that question that Amy asked me about magical thinking was really interesting. We humans do so many things to help ourselves survive, like save voicemails and have travel rituals. None of that stuff is wrong, and we're not wrong to have that magical thinking or those rituals. I really like that conversation about why we do that stuff. I also really loved that the real hope for the future is in exploring grief, allowing it, and questioning our inheritance of it, all so that we can bring more awareness and more kindness and more curiosity to the world around us and the world to come after us. What parts of today's conversation stuck with you? Everybody's going to take something different from today's show, but I do hope you found something to hold on to. Hope really is a crowdsourced thing, and as we heard today, it's really a collective thing. I'd love to hear how grief and inheritance and connection are unfolding in your life and what you thought about today's episode. Check out Refuge in Grief on Instagram and Hereafter Pod on TikTok to see video clips from the show and leave your thoughts in the comments on those posts. Be sure to tag us in your conversation starting posts on your own social media. Use the hashtag HereafterPod on all the platforms. We love to see where this show takes you. And remember to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Those reviews help more than you know. If you want to tell us how today's show felt for you, or you have a request or a question for upcoming explorations of difficult things, give us a call at 323-643-3768 and leave a voicemail. If you missed it, you can find the number in the show notes or visit megandevine.co. If you'd rather send an email, you can do that too, right from the website megandevine.co. We want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. This show, this world, needs your voice. Together we can make things better, even when they can't be made right. You know how most people are going to scan through their podcast app looking for a new thing to listen to? They're going to see the show description for Hereafter and think, I don't want to listen to difficult things, even if cool people are talking about them. Well, here's where you come in. Your reviews let people know it really isn't all that bad in here. We talk about heavy stuff, yes, but it's in the service of making things better for everyone, so everyone needs to listen. In order to get everyone to listen, everybody needs to know about the show. So share about the show in your social networks and leave a review right there for the show. Subscribe to the show, download episodes, and keep on listening. Want more Hereafter? Grief education doesn't just belong to end-of-life issues. As my dad says, daily life is full of everyday grief that we don't call grief. Learning how to talk about all that without cliches or platitudes or simplistic, dismissive statements is an important skill for everyone, especially if you're in any of the helping professions. There's an awesome 6-month intensive training starting in December 2022, and registration is open right now. If you are in the helping professions and you want to get better at serving your grieving clients, no matter what caused that grief, learn more about that training, plus find professional resources and my best-selling book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay, at megandevine.co. Hereafter with Megan Devine is written and produced by me, Megan Devine. Executive producer is Amy Brown, co-produced by Elizabeth Fazio, with logistical and social media support from Micah. Edited by Houston Tilly, music provided by Wavecrush, and today's background noises are provided by Luna barking at a dog walking by, and me fidgeting in my chair because I can't keep still.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.